Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Institute for Personal Development, where total consciousness is the new frontier. Kriya Yoga is the union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices that initiate this process.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's talk consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Well, good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing great on this lunar eclipse day that we're having today, and I want to thank the listeners for tuning in. Well, today on The Voice of Yoga, we have a lot going on today. So we'll be talking about the concept of reincarnation and the place it takes in the philosophy of Kriya Yoga. We are also going to review the laws of karma and the cycle of death and rebirth. Swami will present his position on the subject and how he sees it fitting into the master plan leading to enlightenment. We'll also discuss past life recall, out-of-body experiences, visions, dreams, and paranormal experiences. And Swami will answer the question, what does this have to do with apotheosis? But first, Swami, if you would, answer for us, what is the importance of belief in reincarnation with regards to the goals and objectives of Kriya Yoga?
Reincarnation, which is the cycle of death and rebirth, what I found, you know, I don't know if it's so much that it's something that you have to believe in, but what I found was with the concept of reincarnation, what it helped was it helped me understand some of the questions that you might have. Like, I was brought up as a Christian, and this approaches to Christianity that I was exposed to didn't embrace the concept of reincarnation. So from their perspective, life was this one-shot deal. And even the whole thing that, you know, life is a one-shot deal, and you've got this all-knowing, all-loving, supreme being creates you, knows what you're going to do before you do it, creates you to do it, and then punishes you eternally for doing it, somehow seems very ungodly to me. And then the other thing is that life is a one-shot deal. And you've got this all-knowing, all-loving, supreme creator, and creates one person a perfect physical specimen and another one blind, crippled, or crazy. You know, it's like, where is the equality on that? So what I found was, you know, with the concept of death and rebirth and the cycle and the laws of karma, you know, for every action there is an equal and an opposite reaction that we're chained to, that we don't incarnate as clean white sheets, you know, which means that we come in with karmic merit or karmic debt. That, I found, gave a lot more, I want to say, logic to the concept of why, you know, somebody might be born, you know, with certain what we would perceive as challenges, you know, as opposed to, you know, we're all created equal and this is a one-shot deal. You know, we have on some previous level have selected or ordered all of the things that we have in this lifetime. That I found just helped me accept and understand, you know, just the logic behind why you know, as opposed to, you know, that God has his reasons, kind of a answer to that, you know, that it isn't something that, you know, somebody has created us. It's something that we have, it's a work in progress, and it's happening on all of these different levels through these cycles.
So somebody who comes in with like challenges, like you said, may not be necessarily like a punishment, like some people might think, but it might be because, well, maybe this person was to, maybe their dharma in this life was to teach compassion or patience or something like that to somebody in their circle. Would that be a better way of thinking about the karma?
Yeah. In fact, you know, when we talk about it, sometimes it's hard for me to really have an answer as far as what is karmic merit and what is karmic debt. Mm-hmm. You know, because, say, for example, I mean, what the way we're socialized, you know, that we think, you know, that being, say, for example, born, you know, with all of this extraordinary talent, say, for example, somebody like Elvis Presley, you know, who was what we somehow perceive as the king, you know, was, you know, this image that we are all seemingly aspiring to become. And yet, you know, if you really cross-examined his life, you know, I mean, he was a perfect example of, you know, somebody that was struggling tremendously, and these are all of the things that we, you know, wish we had, you know, good looks, plenty of money, plenty of charisma and attraction. And again, you know, is that karmic merit or is that karmic debt? You know, whereas opposed to somebody who may be born with, you know, tremendous physical handicap, and, you know, is able to, you know, create, you know, a much more productive experience as a result. Now, is that karmic merit or is it karmic debt? Those are things I'm not 100% sure of. But to answer your question, we're basically ordering everything. You know, when we are in this period of transition is where, you know, we give this, it's a very objective kind of assessment of what are the lessons that, you know, we need to, you know, learn in this particular incarnation. And so as a result, you know, we begin to shape it with this, what we call karmic pattern.
So what do we do with this information? Like, so say now we are aware of the fact that we order the body that we're in, and we've ordered everything that has happened to us thus far and will happen to us thus far in our lifetime. So now we're consciously aware of that. So now what do we do with this information? How can we take this information and apply it to our spiritual practice?
Well, I think what we want to be able to do is kind of like what we talk about here, is we want to make a transition where we go from the victim to the creator. Because the closer you are to being able to consciously and willfully shape your reality, the closer you are to this concept of the creator. You know, this concept of God, which is something that we're all aspiring to become, you know, because that would be, you know, I think that would be another really good question is, well, what is God?
That is a very good question. What exactly is it? And what does it look like when I'm trying to become one with God?
Yeah, because again, we have this misconception that God is this supreme being, this cosmic image. You know, the man with the white beard in the white robe. But in reality, you know, the concept isn't that you are all this supreme being that's all-powerful and all-knowing. And the real image of God is the void or the nothing. So to become God really means that you become nothing. You become void, which is, you know, it's a 180-degree image from the one and oftentimes the direction that we're all looking in. And that's what I think is very different about, you know, what we're teaching. And then, of course, to literally desire nothing, you know, is a tough catch. And that's what a spiritual practice really is. In fact, you know, you cross-examine it and measure it against, you know, the religions, the origins of this thing called apotheosis. You know, Jesus said, you must love the Lord thy God with your heart, your soul, and your mind. Well, if you're pointing towards some cosmic image, you're looking in the wrong place. You're using a source of sustenance that doesn't give you the return that, you know, the books are all promising. And so as a result, it doesn't work. The Buddha said it, you know, he said the same thing in a different way. He said you must desire nothing. And of course, you know, most of the people in the Buddhist community are trying to stop desire, which is a very different thing. You know, to stop desire is impossible. But to desire the void or the nothing, that is something that is possible. But of course, you know, it's only possible if you understand the physics and you also understand the procedure.
You reminded me of a question that I wanted to ask you. I had read a book many years ago about a gentleman who had such bad asthma when he was growing up that he couldn't play outside with his friends, and he had to stay indoors most of the time because he just suffered so badly from allergies. And then as he got older, he ended up having some kind of a medical breakdown. We had to be hospitalized and all this other stuff. And then he had these visions, if you will, of a past life experience where he was on a slave trading ship, and he had put all these people underneath the hull of the ship and didn't give them any air, so therefore they couldn't breathe. And then he made this connection that what he was in his previous life, this was payment, this asthma was his payment for what he had done back then. And once he realized that, his asthma or these allergies had gone away. Now, in this case, it worked for him, and he cured himself, if you will, for lack of a better word. But how would somebody, like say somebody who has, you know, their hearing is not that well. I mean, could they possibly go back through meditation or whatever and try to figure out, was this a past life? Like you were saying before, is this a dead, or are we incurring some new karma? I just thought that was an interesting concept, and I wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, that in fact, I think that's exactly, you know, kind of how it works, and it's what we're always saying, that, you know, if you have a physical symptom in your body, there is an inner subjective state that's creating it. And basically, I mean, we're thinking on different levels. So if it isn't conscious, because very few people would consciously employ some sort of symptom, then, of course, it's either unconscious, something that maybe you have, you know, internalized as opposed to some image in this lifetime, or it could be karmic, something that comes from a previous lifetime. And then once you are accustomed to recognizing the association between simple symptoms and these images that are ordering them, then you're kind of behind the forms. And so that's where we make the transition, where we're going from victim to creator. And even say, for example, you know, sometimes you might even recognize that you're ordering it, but you still have to learn the lesson.
Right, yeah, that's the most important thing, is then we got to figure out what is the lesson I'm supposed to get in this lifetime so I don't recur it, right? Well, I think we'll come back to that. Let's pause for a moment so we can hear a word from our sponsors. So listeners, we'll be back in a few moments.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudashyate.
If you are looking for a samadhi-based experience, IPD Kriya Yoga has the goods. A complete yoga program that includes the practices and the process. Kriya Yoga Theory 1 live classes and videos. Get your arms around the spiritual science of Kriya Yoga.
You know, the intention of why we practice is to embody spirit, you know, to feel connected to the life force.
Kriya Yoga Asana live classes and videos. A cosmically engineered system of exercises to initiate apotheosis. A system of exercises engineered for dining and dancing at the cosmic ballroom. Kriya Yoga Theory 2 live classes and videos. A practice in open form designed to facilitate positive growth of consciousness. Get your labyrinth video.
I find the positive side of it is depends on the amount of things you can get.
Kriya Yoga Mantra and Meditation. With repetition comes absorption. Prayan prana and become divine.
At the same time, we all have a unique talent and gift to give back.
Private sessions. The mysteries of the universe have always been handed down verbally from teacher to student. Call or click now and get started. 603-929-0303
or www.ipdtransform.com.
Namaste.
Well, welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you are listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. Well, Swami, I have another question for you. So today I know is a lunar eclipse. Now, does that have any significance of what we're talking about today, reincarnation and the cycle of death and rebirth?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, everything in life is really cycles within cycles, and so the relationship between the sun and the moon and the cycles that those two celestial bodies, that relationship that they have between themselves, I think gives us a very good insight into, you know, other cycles. And one of the things that we always say is the small and the simple helps us explain the large and the complex. So if you can understand, you know, the simple cycle of, you know, day and night on, you know, I want to say a quicker level, whereas, you know, on a broader level, it's the cycle of, you know, the moon passing through all of the different signs of the zodiac, and then, of course, the sun passing through all the different signs of the zodiac. And all of these cycles kind of give us insight into, you know, that everything has a beginning, a middle, and an ending on a empirical level. You know, that it isn't until we learn how to transcend do we really understand the concept of what we call the permanent, the unchanging. But I think the insight from this here particular eclipse is really to help us try and see, you know, maybe get a glimpse of the bigger cycle, you know, the whole thing of this cycle of death and rebirth and this concept of reincarnation, you know, that we do not come in as clean white sheets, but we do come in with, you know, past life issues.
I just recently saw a movie, and it was called Heaven Is For Real. And it was about this young boy, this four-year-old boy who had a vision, and he hadn't died on the operating table, but he had this vision of heaven and Jesus, and he saw his grandfather had approached him and who he had never met before, and at the same time, or I believe it was a girl in another part of the world who also had a vision of heaven, but in the movie you realize that they had actually seen the same visions. Can you give us your take on that? Because I think that's part of what we talked about earlier that we would discuss. It would be like the visions and paranormal activity. What is your take on that movie?
Yeah, again, we have this tendency of trying to give tangibility to something, and that's, I think, one of the pitfalls of our Western science is that it is so empirical. You know, their need for proof. And, you know, without really embracing the concept of a trinity, that things are happening on different levels. And, you know, there's the physical part, there's the complementary unmanifested other part, and then there's the absolute. And the whole intention of, you know, religion and yoga was to educate people in how to separate from our attachment to things that are tangible. Because even though thoughts are invisible, you know, and visions are, you know, they're real. They do have tangibility to us. Different than, say, for example, picking up a rock and putting it in your hand. But we have recollection of our dreams and our thoughts. And so it's our, I want to say, desire to try and make some sort of connection to our physical reality with this concept of heaven or God, which is invisible and intangible and indescribable. Now, I think it's one thing, you know, when you're using it metaphorically so that it points you in the right direction as opposed to getting completely consumed by it and then looking for this and thinking that this is your source of sustenance. That's what they call the sin. That was missing the mark. That was, or in yoga sutras, they call it avidya, ignorance, mistaking something that's impermanent for something that's permanent and unchanging.
Well, it leads me to my next question is that I know you say that, you know, that we don't want to get caught up into the visions and things like that, but rather use all the tools to further our spiritual development. So how could somebody use the information about past life recall? How would they get it? And then how could they use it to further their spiritual development?
Yeah, that's all part of the yoga process. First, we must divide and conquer. You know, compartmentalizing psyche is understanding that things are happening on these three different levels. It's kind of like, say, for example, if you were, let's say you're watching a movie on your television, and it's a murder mystery, but you really want a romantic comedy. Now, how would you go back changing that? You know, because it's appearing on the television, but it's really coming from your DVD player, right? So where the changes really are going to have to take place is in the DVD player. But then how did you get the DVD, right? Because it's going to come from, say, Netflix. So understanding the relationship between your creativity, your mind, and your reality, and then where to go to affect the changes that you're trying to create, right? Because you can't fix it on the TV, you know, which is typically the way that we have a tendency to do that, is we're trying to fix everything empirically from the physical level, where, you know, changing the DVD is of the utmost importance, but then how did you get the DVD? So in Kriya Yoga, we use our minds as a medium. You know, that the mind is the one thing that can go from your physical body to your astral mental body to your causal spiritual body. So the mind can be in the physical body, the mind can examine itself, and the mind can turn to your creativity, your imagination, endless possibilities. It can turn to the void or the nothing out of which everything comes. So learning how to use your mind, you know, learning how to draw from your creativity, your imagination, learning how to shape thoughts, and then learning how to emit them with the power of intention. That's how you use, you know, a spiritual practice to keep your life on course.
I have another question for you. So today being a lunar eclipse, so what do you recommend for our listeners today to take advantage of the energies out there in the universe today?
Yeah, I think trying to understand, you know, a lot of like what we talk about here, trying to see that underlying matter is the realms of energy, and underlying energy is this realms of creativity, imagination, the void or the nothing. And then, you know, educating yourself, you know, in learning how to get a handle on the whole thing, you know, like one of the things that we talk about is our fate is going to basically be determined by what we desire. You know, and if our physical bodies are attached to something physical and tangible, we're going to be of a lower animal nature. If our physical bodies are attached to the realms of vision, the astral plane, you will be of a human, intelligent nature. And if your body desires the void or the nothing, you will be of a wise, divine nature. And it's all going to come down to, you know, what is it that I really draw from? What is it that I desire? And that's where you want to try and focus your attention to affect, you know, I want to say, you know, a more permanent change.
All right, great, great answer. I also think maybe attending your Thursday night Theory 2 class so we can discuss, you know, how do we take yoga, you know, from the mat and bring it into our life. I think that might be very helpful for people. I also want to remind our listeners that we still have a few openings left for our spiritual retreat in Costa Rica for next year, so be sure to visit our website to get information about that. And you can also follow us on Pinterest and Twitter, also Facebook. Be sure to tune into Blog Talk Radio and follow us on Blog Talk Radio as well. We sure would like to hear from you with your comments and questions and curiosities. And I believe next week, or our next show that we're going to be having, we're going to skip a week, is going to be, we're going to be talking about the obstacles and challenges that we might have in our spiritual practice. So, Swami, any further thoughts or comments you'd like to say to our listeners?
No, I'd just like to wish everybody a happy lunar eclipse. And, you know, one of the things, you know, that I didn't mention before is the whole thing of using our relationships to help us understand what is it that we desire. And with that, I'll wish everybody a namaste.
Well, thank you for listening to our program. voice of Lisa. This is Lisa Winton with Swami Jayananda signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.